When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast. I appreciate everybody listening to this podcast. It means the world to me, and hopefully you find value. This episode is amazing. It's with the dog owner who's just about ready to give up because her dog is just throwing her for a loop, and she's having a really tough time. And I think it's just heartwarming, her ability to really hold on to hope and hopefully make some changes. So I know you guys are going to like this. I know you're going to find lots of value into this. At the end of the podcast, if you guys have questions as listeners, I answer your listening questions in the iTunes review chart. So if you want to ask me a specific question about your dog, head over to the iTunes review chart and leave your review or leave your question in the review. And also, I'm going to be coming to Portugal, Porto, Portugal in May. If you guys are in the area over in Europe, or you're that way at all, you can come see me live and hang out with me for the weekend. I'm very excited to go over to Porto, Portugal this May. All ticket and information is in the link in the description. I'll talk to you guys at the end of the podcast.
So I have a Great Dane American Bulldog mix. He's 3.5. I've had him his whole life. I will say he was born in 2020, so I did not do a good enough job socializing him. And then he went through a really terrible hip surgery. I feel like that was at a year old, so he really did not get out of the house much, and we lived in the country. And I just did a really bad job with this dog. So now I don't live where I was in the country, and we're in an apartment, and it is just hell.
Okay. Meaning socialization with people. So when he sees people, he's reactive, fearful, etc. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, he's super insecure. He's 100 pounds. He's very aggressive, reactive. Like, it's not even manageable. God, it's like, it is. I'm sorry, I'm just exhausted. Mm-hmm. And like, we have gone to a couple different trainers locally to me. We're e-collar trained. He's really obedient, but it just, when he's in that panic, nothing can help him. So the e-collar was working for an extended period of time to get it manageable. But now, maybe I'm using it incorrectly, or it's just not something he should be using. Like, I feel like he's getting more annoyed at me, and he's starting to react at me when I'm using even just the vibrate.
Okay. Why don't you walk me through the process of his reactivity. So when is this happening? When you're outside and you see other people?
Yeah. Anything that moves at this point, it's so embarrassing and horrible. Okay. Like, dogs make it worse. He surprises me, and he gets away with, he'll let some people, as long as they're at a certain amount of distance, he surprises me and he doesn't react. But then if they look at him, he just goes nuts no matter what the distance is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I do think he's trainable. It just, like, in this apartment, it just sucks. There's
tight.
Not anywhere where he's not triggered, and I feel horrible because I feel like his nervous system, he's just like, you know, he's very panicky, and I totally understand why he is, but I cannot help him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So we'll start with, what's your obedience like? Obedience is your control, your communication, your ability to talk to him when he is reactive, or even before that, before he's even reactive. What's that look like?
He definitely doesn't look at me at like a leader. Like, I feel like he gets away with a lot of things. He's very stubborn and very smart. He anticipates my every move. So that definitely needs to get better, but he is obedient. He does know his commands.
So when,
but honestly, if he's getting reactive, I could just fuck off. He does not care.
Okay. When you say he takes advantage of you, how so? Like,
he herds me. Like, he'll move me to the bedroom at the evenings if he wants to go to bed. Like,
okay,
he walks in front of me. I do the threshold where I make him sit, and that has started to help before we go through any door, no matter what. but he is just super entitled and
Okay.
he is the boss.
Got it. Sounds like you got it pretty figured out. When you're working with him, with obedience, how often are you doing that, if at all?
So at least a couple times a night. Okay, that's like when he just needs headspace, when I need to just work his brain, we'll do like place, we'll do like basic commands in the apartment, and that's maybe like 5 minutes a day, just here and there.
Okay. All right, so let's do this. I would say this. Best thing to do is to take a step back a little bit, and there's a lot that goes into dog behavior, owning a dog, etc. There's genetics, there's training, there's structure, there's a whole ecosystem that comes into play when you're developing an animal. And they all play a role. And sometimes you could do really, really great in one end of the spectrum and then the other end not too great. And there's nothing you could do about those things. So whenever you're dealing with a dog that has behavioral issues, reactivity, fear, confidence. So let's just start with the confidence and fear. That can stem from literally a million different things, but let's talk about the classical ones that we see, the traditional ones that we see more consistently with pet owners. The first thing is, I guess there's three. There's genetics of the dog being born a terrified, scaredy cat, and that's because mom was, dad was, their grandparents were, etc. There's ways that you can go around that. There's things that you can do to work with that. That's not the end all be all, but it does restrict some progression and you'll have to manage things. Second thing would be your relationship. So if you don't have a good relationship with your dog, dogs being very relationship-based creatures, they want you to be the leader, which means they want you to tell them what they can and can't do because it's not because they want you to be this like role model. It's more about they're not good at that. They're like, tell me what I can and can't do. Tell me if I can do this. Tell me if I can do that. That's how they thrive in life. And then, and so if you don't have good obedience slash communication, because that's what obedience is, it's baseline communication. So when you're working and teaching your dog how to sit on the upscale or the bigger picture of the macro, you're teaching your dog how to do a behavior. But you're also at the same exact time building a good relationship with your dog because you're communicating, you're using your leash, you're using rewards, you're using punishment, you're developing a relationship at the same time as developing obedience. And the third thing is that obedience. It's going to be a mixture of genetics, your relationship, and obedience slash communication slash control. So if those are the typical things that we see dogs get fearful and insecure of, they basically say, hey, you don't know what you're doing. I don't have any skill sets. Now I'm fearful and I'm going to take advantage over certain situations. So some dogs have that personality as well, where if you give them an inch, they go, oh, I got your number. And they take a mile and they check you. And they don't, some of them do, but a lot of times they're not doing it intentionally to see what they can get away with, but certainly that is some of the cases. Sometimes they just step a boundary. You don't do anything about that overstepping a boundary, and then it accumulates this threshold for them that they can get away with a very big thing all the time. So if you say no or leave it or blah, 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 and your dog just takes advantage of you and you don't do anything about it or handle it or fix it or dissolve the situation, then that's them getting away with that. Does that make
Learn.
sense? So that's where that kind of comes from. Then when you get the reaction, it's typically it's an underlying factor of what we just talked about, which is fear, confidence, etc. So when your dog doesn't feel confident with you, again, because you haven't spent enough time with maybe the relationship-based obedience, maybe the dog feels vulnerable with you, or maybe the dog feels whatever. There's also just a case that there's a chance that the dog just doesn't like people or wasn't socialized properly. And so you go back down to management. So the personality of the dog, right? You were raising this dog in a rural area, then you moved into an apartment, and now it's a completely different situation. So my point is there's you can't tell a fish not to swim sometimes. So if you get a dog, it's inevitable that they go through who they are. And then depending on how much skill sets you have with the dog and how much control you have in relationship with the dog is what you can get away with that. You can manage the situation, but you're not going to be able to tell the dog to like new people or even tolerate new people or whatever. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We see this a lot in like the working dog world. People get these really high drivey, super, super high end, like always on the go working dogs, and they live outside. They live in a kennel. They're crated most of their life. They come out, they work, they go back in. They're not good pets. They're not bred to be pets. Those are the types of dogs that we can't have necessarily around kids or other dogs or older dogs or even other dogs just in general. Like they just, that's their personality, right? That's the genetics that were bred into those dogs. And oftentimes you can predict that through good breeding protocols, but you also have to wait 6 to 12 months to figure out who the dog matures into. And then you start figuring things out. And then you make a move to say, hey, this doesn't suit my family right now or at all. And then you make different changes. So anyway, your situation kind of similar. Yeah, I can get this dog. Everything's great. Or at least there's no problems. Your circumstances change. And now this dog, this square, is now being almost forced to live in this round hole, which I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just saying that's one way to look at it, that maybe this dog wasn't a city dog, but now is a city dog or has to be. Mm-hmm. But I would more lean towards control and obedience.
Okay.
With what you're saying. So like you said, you know, first things that we start talking about is like, how good your relationship, how good your communication, your obedience. And you said, well, if he really wants to do something, he's going to blow me off. Screw you, mom. I'm going to do what I want to do. So that's first step. So his reactivity is secondary to control. That means if I said, okay, put your dog into a sit and a stay, and I'm going to walk by another dog, and he historically hates dogs, lights up with dogs. Your dog gets up out of the place, lunges and barks towards the dog.
Totally.
You are, in your head, looking at that situation of my problem is the reactivity. Okay. But from a further scale out, I'm looking at that situation to say, your problem is actually your obedience. Because if you had a better downstay or sit stay, that never would have happened. The problem wouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
Okay. So I'm good. I'm glad that makes sense because sometimes that's like a whole mind game for people like, what? So, okay, good. But to be fair, there's some things that you can't control. So like a dog that lunges towards your dog or a person coming up being an idiot and trying to pet your dog or whatever. There's those things we're going to talk about. But I want you to have like the right kind of headspace as we move into this conversation and talk about these things that I would really want you to look at it from that point of view.
I don't expect him to like love everyone and be that dog. He's not a golden retriever. I don't expect him to be. I just want him to listen to me.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So diluting down our conversation thus far is, you know, exactly that. Like, hey, we don't necessarily have maybe a reactivity problem, but we have more of a lack of obedience problem.
Okay.
So that's the first thing I want. That's how I want you to look at the equation and how I want you to look at the situation in the beginning is that like, that's the first thing this is what's made my clients historically very successful is because they're looking at the wrong thing. They're trying to, and then it becomes here. This is an interesting thing. It becomes this loop too. So the reason the dog is reactive in the first place, lunging at other people and whatever, is because of the lack of obedience. And so it's kind of like you're the problem and the solution if it's a confidence thing. So the dog's fearful, vulnerable, insecure. Somebody comes walking by because you haven't developed that relationship with them, which means getting him out, working on thresholds, holding him accountable, creating boundaries, creating all sorts of different variables that he, you know, needs to respond to. You don't have that relationship. So he's like, oh, there's somebody coming. I love my mom, but I don't trust her because we don't have that relationship. She panics, whatever. That's how he's looking at it potentially.
Totally.
So then a person comes out and he goes, I got this. Whew, flies at the end of the leash. You're holding on. You're upset because he's reacting, but really you're also the problem and the reason why he's reacting. So That so oftentimes when people come into my facility and we work on these behavioral issues, these external problems on the outside, that's the first thing I work on. Is they and if you watch my YouTube channel, you'll see it literally 1,000 times plus with.
Oh, I watch your channel. I promise.
Okay, cool, cool. So you'll see that. Like after having this conversation, you watch another video, you're gonna see the template. It's a very easy. It's a very easy template. Somebody comes in with a behavioral problem. I say, let's go out back, ask your dog to heal. Dog doesn't listen to them at all.
Yeah.
Tell your dog to sit. They probably won't. 70% chance the dog won't sit. If they do sit, they're going to put their butt on the ground for 2 seconds, realize there's no food, they get right up. So their relationship is so wacky. So what I spend literally a day and a half doing is really tuning up their obedience and strengthening and even in some cases starting their relationship with their dog. And then when they get in the group class on Saturday, the dog's not reactive. So the owners are like, oh my God, you stopped the reactivity. And it might look like that, but I'm like, no, I didn't. I solved and or worked on the problem that created the reactivity in the first place. So there's outliers in there. There's definitely some dogs in my channel that just hate people and hate other dogs. They're out there.
So but, can I go
sure,
into that point?
Of course.
So like he is the happiest dog, actually is super affectionate, loves attention. So like, I don't think it's that at all. I think it's definitely the obedience and he just doesn't know what to do. So he's just nervous. So if I get him at a threshold where it's close enough where he notices someone but he's not reacting, he will sit and he will make eye contact with me. Like, we have a great relationship to an extent. I just don't know how to better it. Like, I do the trainings, obviously I'm not doing a great enough job, but like, what's my next step? I don't know how to make him value me more. Or maybe like, how do I make him think that I'm his leader? I don't know what else to do.
Yeah. There's a lot of different things. So again, it's very overwhelming. I understand where you're coming from. You feel just like at the end of the leash and start focusing. I want you to understand why these things are likely happening. And it's because your dog's getting away with everything and you don't really have much to say. Okay. Let's do this. You get your dog on the leash. You tell him to sit. He doesn't sit. What do you do?
I just stand there until he sits. I make him sit.
Perfect. So you would stand there until he sat, meaning like, would you tell him to sit again? What would you do?
I mean, if he's good. Like if I say his name, he'll look at me. Like we make eye contact good. If he will sit on my first command, but let's say someone's coming and he's like more interested in that, I may vibrate on his e-collar and I may walk backwards just to get him like walking with me and then put him in a sit.
Okay. So your accountability right now for behavior that he knows is the vibration. Is that correct?
Yes. Or I just move him and try again. Like, I don't know how to punish him without, I don't know what to do.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, that's fair. You're in a place that most of my owners are in. So this is all very routine for me. So don't feel like you can get out of this. Is what I'm trying to say. I'm giving you hope here. So when you're in this situation, there's a couple things. Let me ask you this: how well does he know the sit? Do you think?
So good, he'll sit.
Perfect. Okay, so this is your sequence, right? And this is like dog training 101, like legit. You have a behavior that the dog knows, you've practiced it, you've preconditioned it, the dog understands it, yada. You tell the dog to do the behavior, they choose not to because they're interested in something else, which is where positive reinforcement will fail, because if you're training is predicated off of positive reinforcement based training, your dog is very, very, very likely, almost 90% chance or higher, that your dog is going to blow the behavior off because your training is predicated off of some sort of currency or value or some sort of reward. Okay. So that is very subjective to what we would call a reward for a dog, because the dog can say, you have a piece of food on your hip, you say sit. Historically, you've taught your dog to cue to sit to then get paid. That's normal. That's what we do with 8 to 12 week old puppies to shape, sculpt, mold, etc. But the moment the dog sees something else that becomes more valuable than whatever reward-based system you have on your persons, that thing, whether it's a dog, person, cat, squirrel, chipmunk, kangaroo, whatever, is going to hold court in your dog's brain. And so oftentimes this is where people get dog owners, right? You get into this situation where you go, okay, this isn't working now. So you either pull back, the dog starts going and starts hyperventilating, jumping, spinning, reacting, whatever. And this is where you come into a problem. So my suggestion is start working on a clearer correction tool to hold your dog accountable for that punishment. Because like you already said, he's flipping you off. And at that mm-hmm. moment, when you allow him to get away with that, that's going to make your reactivity far worse. And I've seen it time and time and time and time and time again. They go, hey,
where we are.
Yes, you likely are. I'm going to go here. I don't care what you said. Yes, I heard you. I'm not going to do it. And then you don't have any ability to counter the dog's emotions there. So they're not going to care about the positive reinforcement because they're already finding a different resource to be motivated by, which is a person or a dog. And so that's where if the e-collar doesn't work, you got to just switch gears to something else. And the e-collar is really an advanced system. What are you using outside of the remote collar for equipment?
So I hate to be this person, but I like don't trust him. So like we are e-collar 24/7. I just bought, I think you suggested it's got like a Herman Springer prong collar. I just bought one the other day, but it's actually too small. So I need to go exchange to a bigger one. But I think a prong collar would be easier for me to use correctly. But I'm just so scared of it.
Yep. And that's good. You should have that hesitancy. That's okay. What I mean by that is you want to make sure the reason why you're scared is because you don't want to mess it up and you don't want to do it wrong.
Yes.
And that's what I mean by that. You want to be educated before you use these tools because like anything else, right? Like you go out and you're like, oh, I don't have my license. But I'm going to buy a car. Well, maybe you should just learn how to drive first. So, yeah. Okay. So that's where I would start. Like the prong collar is good, especially for a big dog like this. Like anything that has Great Dane in it is going to be large and strong and big. So the prong collar is likely a good step because that way it saves you from the ladder of like, we'll start off with a slip or a martingale and then we'll go to the plastic pinch and then eventually we'll probably go to the prong. Because you're already, like the dog is past the work that you should have been doing prior, which means...
Yes.
Does that make sense? Okay, I'm glad that made sense because I had to like...
I promise I've done my homework and nothing you say is going to offend me. I just need help.
Okay, yeah. So it just... He's already like 4 steps ahead of you. And so you're playing catch up at this point. You're not trying to stop something before it gets worse. You're already there. And so the e-collar is good, but it's an advanced tool. And I just wouldn't suggest using it because you really don't want to bite off more than you can chew. And I feel like... It's okay to use for intervention like you're doing, like you hit the pager to disrupt the behavior. But once your dog starts to get frustrated and kind of spiral, that's where you want to like park it a little bit and go back down to the basics. So the Herm Springer is going to be good. You'll definitely have to make sure it's fit properly. And then make sure you have also making sure that you have a safety clip on that collar. So when you're... So when you're developing with the prong collar is your tool. That's your communication skills. That's like a carpenter heading to work with a screwdriver. Like that's your ability to craft this dog at this point. Now, if you were to say, hey, I got this 8-week-old Dane mix, where should I start? We would be having a different conversation, right? Totally different, but we're not.
Yep.
And this is my job. This is what a lot of people don't understand that don't kind of understand like overall behavioral training is they look at a video and they say, why wouldn't you do these things? It's like, well, we're not there. We can't train how you would train an 8-week-old puppy or a dog with no problems the same way we would train this dog with problems that's already far ahead of us. So
right.
Yeah, so we're going to go to using the prong collar to enforce behaviors without the high levels of stimulation. So don't practice this in the game. So you'll go home and you'll work on the basic obedience, the leash and the collar is your enforcement. So that's how you enforce behaviors, like a law enforcement enforces laws, like that's how that works. So you say, sit, the dog goes, okay. If they don't, you're going to use the collar to pop up to correct the dog or just light pressure up. Now you might be thinking, oh, well, he's going to do good when there's not people. I get it. But what you don't want to do is you don't want to go from first grade to a senior. Like that's too fast, too quick. So what you do is you start adding in different distractions to hold the dog accountable, just lightly, not trying to go head into other people. So maybe get a ball, get his favorite food, things like that. And you start throwing them in, you start throwing them in front of him, or you just get creative to say, hey, I'm going to test you. We just did this with a couple of dogs at a shelter I worked at a couple of days ago in Phoenix, Arizona. We put a dog in a place. The dog had a bite history. The dog growled at me. I said, hey, and you can look at this on my Instagram as well. We did the same thing. Put the dog in a place. Dog went to the place. I threw the piece of food. The dog got up. I said, that piece of food is me. So if you're worried about this dog getting adopted, or you're concerned, or you just want the dog to get adopted, the food is me. So he just, so you told him the place. He wanted to go get something that he felt like he wanted, and he completely ignored you. So on one end of the spectrum, it's the food, which is beneficial for him, but he broke the obedience. But on the other end of the spectrum, when it's maybe more aggressive behavior, it's the same exact principle. The dog is saying, I know what you told me to do, but I'm disobeying. And that's just like, that's just life. Like that's what dogs are going to do. They're savages. So you have to get back down to the basics to start working on these thresholds and these things. Because right now you're just chewing on this big thing and you can't digest anything. Like nothing is working. Nothing's making sense. You're frustrated, etc. You have to take a step back.
I just have people telling you to put him down, and like actual behavioralists are just like turning me away, and it just like feels like I'm drowning.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, this is that's my jam. I mean, I talk to people like you every single day that are in these situations. And a couple things, you know, just on that note, like behaviorists are, I respect the job, but you have to understand, like they only are hired as their job is to diagnose what's going on. So they're not trainers. Yeah. So, you know, going to the mechanic expecting to get your teeth cleaned, it's like, hey, I'm going to go to the behaviorist expecting my dog to be trained. That's not going to work. The only thing you're going to walk away from that is, it depends. I don't want to talk shit about behaviorists because some of them have been really helpful. Most of them have been, here's prescription. This is why your dog is doing it. They don't touch the dog. They don't hold the leash. They definitely don't train. They don't bring the dog anywhere. That's just been my experience, the vast majority of behaviorists, which isn't a bad thing. It's just when dog owners like yourself go to behaviorists because you see like this PhD on the window and you say, hey, this must be the thing. And they go, yeah, exactly. The amount of dogs that I've worked with that have supposed to have been euthanized or on a gambit of medication after just working with a skilled, knowledgeable trainer, that's like not 50%, but like probably 20%
of our
clients.
I know, and that's why I'm like obsessed with your training.
Yeah, okay, good. So you get
it. Can I connect with you on that? Yeah, totally. So they have prescribed him Prozac, and there's something else. I just can't remember what it is, but I think it's making him like more agitated. It makes him drool. And every time I go, she just can't like wants to up his dosage. And I just feel like he's a zombie sometimes. It just like, what's your take on, I know that you're not trying to overstep, but like, if you're in my shoes, what do you want to do?
I want to, couple things. Often, I mean, I'm going to be real. Oftentimes, like I talk to so many dog owners and they've never effectively punished their dog for the behavior they're desperately trying to get rid of.
Yeah.
I mean, it gives me goosebumps just thinking about it, how often that conversation goes. And because, you know, people pay for an hour or even 3 days or a seminar with me, but sometimes it's that simple. Hey, Tom, I got this thing. It's either they haven't taught the dog the behavior they want to do differently. So my dog's pulling me on the leash. How's your heel? What's that? Okay, let's work on that. Or often it's here, and I'm like, hey, what are you doing that's effectively punishing your dog for this behavior?
Right, I don't correct him. You're right.
That's it. So there you go. Okay. So it's like, so think about this. Okay, it's that simple, but it's also, there is more work to it than that. But I just like on the shell, like you watch my videos, you've seen the things I do, and it's like, there is no smoke and mirrors there. It's sometimes that simple. Like, dogs come in with a problem, and their owners are like, really what it gets down to is like, okay, we've never punched the dog. It's just never happened. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, so now's the time. When you're at your wit's end and you feel like you're drowning, we should start telling the dog what they're doing is wrong. And that's where you should start. I mean, so that's the answer to your question is like, where would you start? That would be it. So if I was there, I would say, correct your dog correct your dog when they do something wrong. So it's just,
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's easy to get overwhelmed with everything because you're oftentimes dog owners like look in the wrong places for answers. And that's why they feel so discouraged, is because again, like behaviorists and other trainers, they don't do what you need, right? So it's not that your dog is this, I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't know your dog, but I'm just saying it's likely that your dog isn't this freak show of a dog that is like, you have to put down. But when you go to a behaviorist and they go, here's a bunch of medication, if that doesn't work, put the dog down, that's their job. Like, that's what they do. Like, that is literally their clinical job, is to diagnose a dog's behavioral problems, give you advice on how to change it, write you a script to hopefully help change the behavior. And listen, I'm not against medication. It changes lives. It betters lives. But I'm just saying, like, that's their MO. Or if you go to another trainer that is a positive, only reward-based trainer, where they only believe in positive reinforcement, if you have a behavioral problem, that is also not going to line up. That doesn't exist. Yep. Positive reinforcement trainers are to teach behaviors, and that's it. The line is drawn right there. It says it on their website. It says it on their business cards. It says it in their Instagram profile picture and their TikTok. Positive reinforcement trainer only. That means that you only shape, mold, guide behaviors. So when something bad happens or your dog does something wrong, but if that doesn't even exist, that's just a marketing thing. Anytime you put a dog on a leash, you're telling them that they can't do something they want to do. They want to run away from you. They want to go chase stuff. Anyway, it's a whole thing. So that's where I would start.
Can I ask you something that's like very entry level? I don't know how to correct this fucking dog.
Yeah.
I know with the prong, I understand that's a really clear correction. I don't know how to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, I can help you with that. So that's what I was saying before. Is what you want to, you don't want to go out and go to the game and just correct the dog for barking. That's not going to work. You want to teach, so you go back down to, okay, let me see. So, okay, no, you're not at all. You're the best. Like, you're not the worst at all. This is just, I just want to explain it in a way that is really helpful to you, because I can feel your pain. So let's put it to you this way. Okay. So let's just say we have a kid. Say the kid's 5, okay? And we bring the kid to the park and we say, hey, don't go across the parking lot, play on these swings. I know that there's slides across the parking lot, but you can't go there because it's dangerous. But you don't tell them that. You just say, hey, you can't go there. Don't go there, okay? So they play on the swings, which is good. They're playing on the swings, which is good. And all of a sudden, you turn your back and the kid's sprinting across the parking lot, right? And you go, hey, stop. Like, at that moment, that very moment, that kid's going to turn it. They're either going to laugh and go, ah, yeah, okay. And they're going to keep going, which is going to put them into danger. Or they're going to go, and they're going to go, oh, crap. And they're going to come running back. Now, the reason typically why that those two shifts happen is because of your pre-existing relationship. So at some point, you've corrected that kid to some degree to make them listen to you, right? Trust you, respect you, react to what you're saying instead of literally just walk right through it. I mean, how many times have we seen that with kids in airports or in restaurants or on vacation, or same thing with dogs? It's like they literally are like, you might as well just drop the leash. Just walk away. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the worst. And so you don't have that relationship right now. So when you yell to your kid running across the parking lot, they're not going to halt the brakes and go, oh, wait, what'd you say? They're going to keep going. So in order to start developing that relationship, you just have to start at the threshold. So let's just say this. We talked about this earlier a little bit. You go to a door. Your dog is on a prong collar. Your dog is on a leash. Those are just the tools for a dog this size and where you're at. So what you do is you open the door. The dog goes, yep, we're walking through. Now, and I'm just going to go through this sequence, and this may be applicable to you. But I know it's applicable to you at some degree, just maybe not with this. You may, because this is what I hear. Oh, no, he's great with stay. Okay, then sit or down or place, whatever. I'm just giving you an example. You go to the door. You slide open the door. The dog wants to go through. You take your leash as your dog is about to go through, and you correct your dog. Nope, correction. So this is the very fundamental thing that we're talking about. The dog wants to do something. They go, hey, I'm out of here. The door is opened. You correct the dog. They stop in their tracks, and you go, at the same time. So you didn't do stay. You didn't do leave it. You didn't do sit. You could have, but you didn't. You just said, hey, no, like that. Okay, you shut the door. You open it again. The dog goes through again. Correction. And you're snapping that collar. So to answer your question a little bit more granularly, how do you correct the dog? You're snapping the collar in the direction you want the dog to go. So if they're going forward, you're snapping it back. You're not doing it hard. You're not doing it to try to hurt the dog. You're just doing it to snap the dog's attention. You're doing it as fast as you can.
Okay.
So snap. Like that. That's boundary setting right there. That's something you probably lack.
Yes, for sure.
So that's where you start. So then two beautiful things happen here. The dog goes, oh. A, you're holding the dog accountable for probably the very first time, where you're like, hey, you can't walk through that door until I release you. Okay. And then the other really beautiful thing about the whole concept of boundary setting is the dog starts putting more trust into you, starts becoming more engaged with you, starts asking for permission, starts looking at you. Like when I do this with clients, they go, oh my God, my dog's looking at me. My dog's never looked at me. It's because you've never given your dog a reason to. And it's not even like, I guess it's my opinion and subjective, but it's subjective to the thousands and thousands and thousands of dogs I've trained and filmed and put up there. You know what I mean? Like you could do it other ways. It's just, I have found the profound ability to just set boundaries solves 80% of behavioral problems outside of genetics. So
yeah.
It's really beautiful and really easy concept if you can kind of figure out the game. And so that right there, that boundary setting, the micro is you're just setting a boundary. But the bigger picture is your dog's like, oh, shit. Like, you're putting your foot down here? Like, I can't do this? And that sometimes helps dog go, and they just, like, melt away. And they just start becoming calmer and more relaxed and start listening to you. But the other end of the spectrum is you're beginning the stages of holding your dog accountable at a small level. You're not waiting for the dog to be exploding on the leash trying to kill somebody. You're holding your dog accountable at a small level. So again, you're learning how to like ride your bike on training wheels at that point. Now, once you go out to the arena and you're starting to go downhill without the training wheels, like you got to have your practice in. And the way to start practicing is those thresholds. The other thing you can do in conjunction with that, take a piece of food, throw it on the ground, tell your dog to stay or sit or whatever. Put your dog, sit. They go into a sit. You throw the piece of food on the ground. They go, oh, that's mine. Correction. Nope, it's not. Boundary setting. Thresholds.
Okay.
That's what you start doing. And that's why when you do it in the beginning, it's really, really nice because in the future, the dog just molds into this really nice dog. But again, there's some dogs that are just like, yeah, I still don't like dogs. But your control is so nice. Your relationship is so nice. Your ability to tell the dog to do something and they do it is nice, but you still have to manage the situation. Like your dog can hate other dogs, but you can still live with other dogs, but you have to manage it. And it doesn't have anything to do with your training at that point. It has to do with your management of like, my obedience is really great. There's nothing I can do to change this. This is how things are going to go. Okay. So anyway, that's where you can start with those things. And I can give you like, again, thresholds at the door, basic place, sit, stay, or whatever with food or a ball. And once you get it down where the dog is not just lunging, like your dog right now is just grabbing gears. They see it, they got it. Mm-hmm. It's theirs. Boom, explosive. You don't exist. There's no filter. They run across the parking lot, even though you told them not to. They don't care because you haven't practiced it. So I have a video on my Instagram that I posted like 2 days ago when I was in Phoenix. It's a really good thing for you to check out. This shelter dog was on a cot stay, threw a piece of food, dog got off. She corrected the dog kind of, but not really. Threw a piece of food, the dog got off. She was a little bit better at the correction. She threw the piece of food the third time. She corrected the dog with the proper snap. The dog sat there, didn't move, got corrected. She threw the piece of food the fourth time. The dog didn't move. So the dog learned that that boundary was set. And you're using a form of punishment / compulsion to say, I know you want this. You'd rather be eating that food, but I told you you can't, so you're going to stay here. I'm forcing you to stay here, right? So again, anybody says force-free dog training, they're lying to you. There's no such thing. It doesn't exist. Yeah. The dog always wants to do something. You leave the house and the dog wants to go with you to work in your office and your cubicle, you better bring your dog to work because you're a force-free dog trainer. You know what I'm saying? I'm giving you these things because I know you've done your research and your mind is spinning. You're trying to find the right thing and it's overwhelming, but I'm just giving you perspective of things that when you tell your dog to do something, you have to enforce it. And if they don't, your relationship starts to just crumble because they know that there's no foundation there.
Okay.
So that's where you start. Now, my suggestion is watch my prong collar videos. I have at least three really good ones on my YouTube channel, absolutely for free. So you need to know about the equipment. You need to know how to fit it. You need to know how the mechanics work because you can get a screwdriver, but it's not going to mean you can build a house. So you can get a prong collar all you want. It's not this like fix it thing. You have to use the tool. It's not just going to work itself out. You have to know how to use it. You got to know how to size it. So that's my suggestion. And then once you start working on these things, I'm giving you homework here. There's also a video that I just posted, my latest full-length upload on my YouTube channel with a Malinois. So okay. It's literally using positive reinforcement to basically use constructive avoidance to have your dog not react is really what it is. And it's the title is This Forces All Dogs to Be Reactive and Fearful. So that is probably the most updated, best version of using countering to stop a dog from reacting. So you have to have good handling skills in order to achieve those goals. And oftentimes, again, people don't have any handling skills. So we go into it with like 10 things we have to work on and you're not going to, so you're just going to have to take time building what you have to do because you have a hard dog. You're in a tough situation having a reactive dog in the city or in an apartment. So it's not easy. So it's not like you're failing. It's like, you had a really easy project and then it turned really hard really quick. So it's not like you've done anything wrong. It's just now it's much, much harder. So anyway, that video, This Forces All Dogs to Be Reactive and Fearful, is really, really good for how you can use obedience to counter reactivity. But in your case, like this isn't going to be realistic. This is just one. This is the positive reinforcement side. This is the one, and I even say in the beginning of the video, like, if and when your reward-based system goes out the window, because there is going to be a time where that does, I want to make sure all my clients have an opportunity to bounce back from that using some sort of correction. And that's what that video is kind of about, is using, here's how to do positive reinforcement to use constructive avoidance. That's a beautiful video to watch. And then... But you have to start there because you can't go out and full-blown correct. Like, you correct your dog. That's why he's redirecting on you, and that's why he's pissed at you because he's like, we don't have that relationship. You don't tell me what to do.
Yeah, he like legit is bitching at me.
Exactly. That's a good way
to put it. He'll sit, and then he starts to bitch at me, and it's like, what the hell? You've never done this.
That's a great way to put it. He's frustrated because he's like, Mom, we don't have that. It's like your little brother or sister are starting to boss you around. You're like, what? No. This is not working like this. I'm in charge. You're not. Sit back down. And so that's what you're seeing, is you're seeing a lot. You're seeing reactivity. So the dog sees a dog or a person reacts, and then you're seeing frustration. So when you say, hey, leave it. No, you haven't spoke those words to this dog before. So when you do it in a realistic situation at a high intense level, stimulated level, you're failing. That's why you're so really, to me, you're like, hey, Tom, I've never ridden a bike. I just entered the Tour de France and you're Lance Armstrong and I failed. You need to help. And I'm like, you've never ridden a bike. Of course you failed. Like, pull yourself together here. Like, of course you failed. Like, this is not, you 100% set yourself up here. So that's where to start.
How much time do you think, I know this is a jaded question, but realistically, I'm not the best dog owner. How much time do I need to allot, like, to train my dog a day?
Okay, two things. It's not a jaded question, and I would argue that you're, I don't think you're a bad dog owner because you've paid me to help you. There's a lot of people who just let their dogs be reactive or just kill them. So don't be so hard on yourself. Yeah. The other thing is training doesn't have to be like, I understand like not everybody can stay at home with their dog and train all day. Like I can, because that's my job and I get paid to do it. Like,
yeah.
Right. But not everybody has that luxury. So the reality is you just want to get good quality sessions in. I would say 10-15 minute sessions throughout the day. If you can do three of those a day, that would be great. If you can do 10, that would be better. Like working out. Mm-hmm. How fast do you want to get results? Okay. The other thing is they also need the physical stimulation as well. So they need more than just training. They also need physical exercise. Bigger dogs tend to need less physical exercise than like smaller or medium dogs. Like a border collie is probably going to outrun your Dane mix all day. So those are also things like I would be doing things in conjunction with mental stimulation with,
like you know, a treadmill or something?
Yeah, treadmill or, you know, just long walks or something like that. But ideally it would be.
I'm so scared to walk this dog.
Sure. Treadmills.
That's another reason why he's just been horrible.
Exactly. It's a perpetuating thing. It just keeps going into each other. Like it just never ends. And I understand that. It happens every day to people. So yeah, treadmill's great. Flirt poles are awesome.
What is that?
Flirt pole is like a big cat toy for a dog. You can get it on Amazon.
Okay.
Yeah, just look up dog flirt pole. So doing things like that, mental and physical stimulation, very, very, very important. The other thing that you can do too, depending on, again, like how serious you are about this, where you're at, like, I don't know. Some people have a really hard time finding a time and professionals in their area that they can trust and or are effective with working with them. You can also work with me online at a higher level, which means you can send me footage of you working with your dog and I'll be able to like every week give you back feedback on that. That's another option, which has been really, really helpful and successful with dogs all over the world because the big thing for most people is time. They can't go to training class. And if they do go to training class, maybe that trainer isn't equipped or knowledgeable to help them with that. And so in this case, the new program that we created is kind of best of both worlds. So I'm just throwing that out there. But I would go back down to the basics and start off with training on your basics. I also have a course called the No Bad Dog Kickstarter course, which is good for people like yourself. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So that targets exactly. So I don't have a whole lot of time. I need to make time. I understand.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the weekly course would be best, but what's your take on a dog with separation anxiety on a board and train? It to me sounds just dangerous.
So a board and train with a dog with separation anxiety?
My dog has really bad separation anxiety. Mm-hmm. I can't even go to the grocery store without him getting physically sick. So I was thinking since I don't have time, someone else could train him, but this would just be horrible for him. I don't think he would get anything from it.
It's tough to say because also like a lot of dogs, like a lot of dog owners who think of this stuff where it's like, hey, my dog like can't live without me. And that may be true. I'm not trying to discredit that. That definitely may be true. However, you'd be surprised like what a dog will do a week away from their owner. Like they completely.
He's not going to fall over and die, but it's going to be hard the first 3 days.
Yeah. It's going to be hard the first 3 days, no matter what. Like it doesn't matter, you know, what kind of,
right.
Yeah,
right.
it's going to be harder for you, I would say. But anyway, so there's a lot of things that you can do, but, the board and train is, it's a good option for sure. Board and trains are good because you can kind of see like what your dog is capable of with a professional. Like that's the good thing. Like for an example, when I go to shelters and stuff, like I'm not there to train dogs. And I mean, I am, but the reality is I show the volunteers like what these dogs are capable of and say, hey, this is what you could do here. Anyway, but yeah, I mean, feel it out. I mean, if it's a local place, worst case scenario is like, they're like, hey, your dog hasn't eaten in 7 days, come pick him up. And then you're like, okay. Best case scenario is, then your dog gets better and you find a trainer that you trust that can, you know, help you out with it. But the reality is like, it's going to be up to you, because as somebody who has a board and train program, like, we're going to get your dog whipped into shape and obedient and listening and blah, blah, blah. But if you don't put in the time, you know, then yeah, it's.
So you're just going to revert right back to.
Oh yeah. 100%. It's like hiring a personal trainer. If I'm the personal trainer, you're like, hey, I want to get in the best shape of my life. And I'm like, okay, you got to eat this. You got to work out this. We do it. I whip your butt in the shape. You're great. And then 6 months later, you just stop doing everything. I'm like, okay, just let me know when you want to sign up again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
So yeah, so I just wanted you to be aware of that, because again, a lot of people have the misconception of dog trainers just fix everything. And to some degree, yeah, like we fix a lot of dog owners' problems, but we also don't create them. Dog owners do. So we kind of like,
yeah,
you know, yeah. Anyway.
Okay, cool. I mentioned boundaries today. He doesn't have boundaries at home. I stopped free feeding. What else can I do to set boundaries? I know you've mentioned, you know, correcting him and doing a little bit of training, throwing the food and just seeing his impulse control. But like, is there anything else that you can think of, or any other boundaries a healthy dog has? That my dog has no boundaries.
What's the question?
So like, what is your take on a dog getting on the furniture? Like, he's entitled to my space is his space.
Okay. So
is that appropriate or not?
No, is it appropriate? No. But if you had a good, healthy relationship with your dog could do whatever you want until you say otherwise. Like, the whole furniture thing, like a lot of people will say like, hey, should I let my dog in the furniture? It's like, it's not about that. It's about your ability to tell your dog to get off the furniture. That's where people have a problem, because they don't have a good relationship. They don't have boundaries. They don't the dog flips you off and says, rah, screw you. And then you get into a conflict because they're sleepy and tired and they don't want to get off. And then they might fight you, and then they're growling and they're nipping at you. And it's this whole thing. It's like, that's where like a lot of people, you know, they're like, oh, you know, my dog trainer said my dog shouldn't get on the couch. And it's like, it's not so much about that. It's really more about your ability to control. Just say, hey, get off, you know, and then the dog gets off and that's it. So anyway,
do you think I should start making those decisions now while I'm trying to better this relationship, or just leave things and just do smaller boundaries?
Start small and build up. Yeah. You want to start small and build up. Don't bite off. Again, like, this dog has never been punished in his life. So you're going to come out the gate swinging and it's not going to be great. It's not going to be great at all. It's probably going to be, like you're already kind of witnessing, it's going to be more, conflicting than anything. You're going to see a lot of conflict. Mm-hmm. So start off small. So again, if you punish your dog at a very small level and you start building up that threshold of control and boundaries, instead of going out there and your dog really reacting and losing their mind and then you just slam the dog, they're going to be like, whoa. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Okay, cool. You probably don't know how much this would be, but for your weekly course, do you have an idea of what that looks like?
Yeah. Let me just check really quick. So so there's a 30-day and then there's like a 3 months, like 90-day thing. Okay. 90-day. Yeah, let me check. 30-day. And then there's the 30-day. So the 30-day is $427 for the month, and then the 90-day is $1,100. So the 90-day obviously gives you 3 months, a lot of work. We meet once a week live, and then once throughout the week, I also send you back all of the homework of like, hey. So I watch your video and record my reaction and send it back to you, so you know exactly what you're doing.
Okay, that's perfect. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for your time. I mean, is there anything you want to ask me or anything else we should connect on?
No, I think that you have a big project and you need to do quite a bit of work in order to recalibrate things. Yeah, that's the biggest thing because right now you have a big project, you have a difficult dog, you're trying to get it sorted out, and this one phone call is going to be really helpful. It's going to kickstart you in the right direction, but it's certainly not going to train your dog to get to the next level. It's definitely going to help. So my suggestion is like keep training, find somebody that you can train with, hopefully, and or sign up with me and we can work on more advanced stuff because I can tell you what I can do there. But that's what I would do.
Okay.
Yeah. So just keep working on it. Just keep getting going each day, separating your sessions, quality over quantity. That's what I would do.
Okay. Thank you so much for all of your time.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good luck. And just remember, like, you can do it. It's just going to take some time and it's going to take consistency and some hard work, but you can get there. And I think that you definitely can come out on top. You just have to, take a little bit different road down that.
Totally.
Okay. All right. Good luck.
Yep.
Wish you luck.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah. Bye. All right, you guys, you reached the end of the podcast. The first question comes from JCB1128. Help me build my confidence. It can be so overwhelming. The best way to train your dog. I really want the good dog, but having a hard time knowing where to start with different approaches and voices out there. So thankful I found Tom. My question is, I really want my dog and my best friend's dog to be friends. We've tried introductions, and after listening to a recent podcast, realizing that we did it all wrong. We didn't start with neutral ground. My dog seemed to be happy and wants to be friends. And hers is reactive, growling, barking, snapping, resource guarding. What can we do to start? It's not too late. You just want to reset things. So again, go for those walks. Start with the fence. Start with the X pens if you can. Just doing everything you can to like reestablish that relationship if possible. I think that's the most important thing. I also think that removing anything that the dog can have resource guarding thoughts with is also important. So like if there's bones, food. Toys, any of those things need to be up and away because your dog is obviously really easily, let's say, defensive and potentially resource guarding with these things. So just make sure that those things are away and just do it the right way. So start off outside, neutral grounds, going for walks, and just doing everything you can to make it fair and as safe as possible for the dogs to create a good relationship. So there's no issues there. That's where I would start with that. And I wish you the best of luck. And thanks for listening. Next one, Lauren 1804, 6 month old German Shepherd. Her obedience is great. At this age, we work as much as possible. She really listens well and is in that teenager stage. And she gets very excited when certain people come over. She's whining and she's jumping. And I use a Hermes Springer. I'll put her on her leash and keep her down and say no off. And she cries and whines with tail wagging. So she's excited. Eventually, she does calm down and leaves that person alone. When this happens, I don't have her leash on. She has much fallen back. And I'm nervous that she's going to hurt herself. And obviously, don't want her to hurt herself. It's not malicious. She's just very sweet. And it's mainly with people that she's met before. I still crate her with the doors open, so I don't know if I should be putting her in her crate when people are coming over. I think that she's just at an age that's going to get better, so I think just continuing to work on the training that you're doing is important. So like correcting her when she jumps up is important, making sure that she understands that jumping's bad, making sure that the people that are coming over to greet her, well, not necessarily her, but coming over and are greeting her, I think is important that you also are making sure that they're fair. So like not getting the dog riled up, not petting the dog in the wrong times. So kind of rewarding the dog for these behaviors, things like that. So that's important too, to make sure that you're what I call people managing or guest management. So just making sure that the dogs aren't getting set up for failure. So there's all of that, but then just correcting. So making sure you say off. So the dog, wagging the tail up, realizes that jumping is inappropriate and we're going to stop that. And that should be sustainable. Like your dog shouldn't be jumping if they understand that it's not appropriate, but also just making sure that you're timing it right. So oftentimes people don't time the corrections right. They don't do the corrections right. So just making sure that the correction is meaningful and the dog understands it and cares about it. And that's my suggestion right now. But, you know, things could change. So let me know what happens in the future if you're still listening. All right, next one comes from Dylan Brinkman. So much good insight and knowledge on training dogs, the highest standard. I love listening to the podcast in the car while doing chores. Question, when training a puppy, what do you do if they immediately listen or comply right away if they don't? Scenarios, after we walk or potty, I ask my puppy to sit and wait by the door, and it takes his leash off and open the door. He is sometimes still excited and won't sit right away. I just think that you're asking your dog to do something unrealistically. So your dog is in too much high state of mind, and you're telling your dog or asking your dog to sit when they're overly stimulated. So that's likely what's happening there. So I would just not tell your dog to sit or ask your dog to sit under those circumstances, because that's not going to happen under those circumstances. So that's one thing. So setting your dog up more for success is important there. And then let's see. The other thing is, if you have to repeat the commands, that means that you're likely, like your dog is probably not at a point, again, where you're asking your dog to do something and they're just not prepared to do it, or you don't have the skill sets to do it. So it just sounds to me like you're asking your dog to do something where their obedience isn't good enough for that yet. Other times when we're walking and training, I'll ask him to go to his place and we'll not listen right away. So again, it's just, in some of your YouTube videos, I've heard you mention to not repeat commands. Yeah, it just means that your dog's obedience isn't good enough to be asking them to do the things that you're doing. That's what it seems, I believe. That's what I would say. Hopefully that is helpful. Thank you guys for listening. Again, if you're listening to this and you have a question for me, I'll answer it next podcast. Head over to the iTunes review chart, leave your question in your review, and we'll talk to you guys next time. Thank you for listening. Bye.